is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report, Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, Strategic Studies Institute. We begin in the important development of North America right now. Mexico has a new president and a new administration. Claudia Sheinbaum, former mayor of Mexico City, now represents the dominant Morena Party in office in Mexico City and throughout the land. AMLO is still with us, but not authoritatively. He is a charming and, what you'd have to say, is 20th century regarding socialist instincts. Claudia Sheinbaum is unknown at this point, known as a technocrat. That could be anything. However, it is encouraging to see Claudia Sheinbaum emphasizing the investor class. Since AMLO's retirement, he can only run for one term, the Mexico markets have been roiled by a decline in the worth of the peso with regard to other currencies. And that is a blow to investor class become hesitant about Mexico. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. The report from Reuters is not encouraging for Claudia Sheinbaum's campaign to bring the investors back. IMF sees Mexico economic growth slowing in 24-25. Was this expected, Evan? And is Claudia Sheinbaum the person to turn this around? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, it was expected, and it was to some degree predictable. As you pointed out, there are both reasons to hope for positive things from Claudia Sheinbaum, given her technocratic orientation, her talk and focus on doing practical things like the building the infrastructure and policies to attract more people coming in who want to invest in nearshoring related activities, as well as her possibly technocratic orientation toward things such as green energy. However, the strong winds that she's pushing against right now, number one, of course, is that growth is slowing in the United States. And number two, you have concerns that the new judicial reform, which is going to involve the replacement of the Supreme Court, the replacement of about half of the federal judges in 2025 and the other half in 2027, and the other reforms that could actually occur to Mexico's legal system and administrative system with the two-thirds majority that Morena, her party, controls in the lower house and almost in the upper house, that possibility for change creates uncertainty of the environment for investors. And so in that environment, you have, first, you had the World Bank saying that because the combination of the U.S. and investor uncertainty, they saw the growth that was forecast for this year only coming in at about 1.7%. So they dropped their estimate by about 6 tenths of a percentage point, and something similar, about 1.5% for 2025. The IMF, a little bit more recently, just came up with a similarly downgraded estimate. So interest rates, it looks like, will remain high right now at about 10.5%. Inflation, it seems, is under control. But the real concern is what will happen with particular projects. There was just a major U.S.-Mexico bilateral business summit, and the talk of what that judicial reform could mean really dominated that agenda. I think it really reflects some of the concern, the uncertainty. And the problem is, when you have major investments, that uncertainty can translate into billions and billions of dollars not coming in. And so you have what's talked about $20 to $30 billion in new projects. Some of the big ones, there is a corporation called Mexico Pacific that might build a big liquid natural gas refinery in Sonora. That would be a $15 billion investment alone. You've got Amazon talking about building some infrastructure to support telecommunications and cloud services in Mexico. That could be at least $600 million. You have Royal Caribbean talking about a new tourist complex in the Yucatan Peninsula in Quintana Roo. You've got another major possible oil investment by a company by the name of Woodside that may be doing a big joint venture called Trion. So there's a lot of major projects that could happen, and a lot of minor ones too. And so the real question is, will that investor uncertainty about what Sheinbaum will do, beyond reasons to think about her good governance lead them, or at least lead a portion of them, to adopt wait and see. And if that happens, it will come through in lower than expected growth, just really as happened under AMLO.
Is there a reason to believe that Claudia Sheinbaum is a new day in terms of the Mexican, not the investor class, the owner class, the ownership class? There have been remarks that I've read over the years, Evan, that Mexico is dominated by certain large fortunes, and that those fortunes are dominant in the marketplace, in the domestic marketplace. Is there any reason to believe that that will change under Sheinbaum?
Well, it's likely that you'll see a little bit less populist rhetoric than what you had with respect to AMLO in his fourth transformation, although Sheinbaum has certainly reaffirmed her attention, at least publicly, to continue with that fourth transformation. I think what you see is a difference between what are the major macro policies that she will adopt and the power that she has in things like administrative capability with a changed judiciary, and how she'll actually use that. And so, for example, you have major problems with Pemex right now, the oil company. To what degree will she be able to, through technocratic means, get that under control and actually permit the type of needed new exploration with Mexico's declining production that you had under the Peña Nieto administration? It appears that she'll continue AMLO's orientation towards energy, leading everything through the Mexican Electricity Organization, the CFE. But to what degree will she allow smart private public partnerships that will allow Mexico to have a greater mix of green energy, given that's her passion? And again, the real big question also is how will she manage the opportunities of nearshoring? Will her policies, tax policies and other things, begin to discourage some of those big investments? And frankly, the other big uncertainty is 2025, when the negotiations over USMCA renewal begin, and 2026, when they have to be finalized. Will those negotiations go south under Sheinbaum? And that will have a lot to do with her relationship with the United States. Right. And if that goes south, that could be the one major thing, the loss of Mexican access to the U.S. market from places like Nuevo León, that could really cause the Mexican economy to be unhinged. And so there's reasons to be hopeful. And yet at the same time, there are some big clouds on the horizon.
A small attention to that it's less than 100 days to a new administration. You were part of the Trump administration's Latin American policy. We can presume a continuation of those policies with Mexico. Do we have any information about a Harris Latin American policy with regard to Mexico?
Well, I should say, John, that on both sides there are substantial causes for uncertainty. I think even with a new Trump administration, the question is, what things will be reemphasized. Of course, former president candidate Trump has talked about interest in substantially increasing tariffs on cars produced in Mexico, and certainly it would appear that there's a focus on renewed attention to the immigration policy, to something that could create some sources of tension with a Sheinbaum government. Yeah, Vice President Harris has been remarkably low key, other than immigration, and saying exactly what she was going to do with respect to Mexico. There's reason to believe that at the very least, some of the interpersonal relationship that she might have with President Sheinbaum could, through that positivism, could create the space to work through some of these major issues like USMCA renewal, and certainly on things like environmental policy, where there's reason to believe that she and President Sheinbaum see eye to eye. I think it's going to depend a lot on tone, and it's also going to depend a lot on the organizational efficacy of the people that a President Harris would put into her Latin America team and where they want to take things with Mexico.
Professor, we turn to Venezuela because there's been a catastrophe in the oil business, and this is serious. And as I understand from your instruction over the years, the Venezuela oil apparatus is badly in need of attention, not only for updating, but also for safety. The news, Maracaibo, at least 21 people, including workers, neighbors, and firefighters, were injured in a fire at a crude storage tank in Venezuela's La Sina oil terminal. The fire broke out early in the day during a storm and has been raging through the evening. This is just 24 hours out of date. The facility used mostly for moving crude and fuel between domestic ports is located near the western city of Cabimas. Now, this looks like an accident. However, I understand over the years with Chavez and then Maduro, the handling of the Venezuela oil business was given over to the military, as I recall, without attention to all the updating and all the technology available. And now the investors are extremely reluctant to come back in for updating. Is this something we're going to see more of, a deteriorating apparatus, so that the ambition to sell oil to refloat the currency and the country's economy is elusive because the oil can't pump?
Well, first of all, John, the fire was almost certainly an accident, although probably a preventable accident. It was said that the initial explosion appeared to have begun during a storm. But part of the problem is that, as you alluded to, one of the things that's happened at the beginning with the Hugo Chavez era is there has been a total neglect of the refurbishment and putting money into managing the infrastructure that actually produces oil, the refinery infrastructure, the tubing. And so what you've had is a series of leaks and deterioration that increases the risk of not only fires, but also other the escaping of gas and oil. Indeed, there's one calculation that was made by an environmentally focused organization last year that documented that in 2022 alone, you had 86 different oil spills and gas leaks in Venezuela, principally in Zulia State and Falcon, which is part of the heart of that oil and gas industry. And indeed, the La Salina fire reminds us of a dramatic incident that occurred at one of Venezuela's major refineries in Amway, where you had literally a substantial part of a gas refinery that exploded. It was the worst gas fire explosion in Venezuela's history. So certainly it's likely that these type of infrastructure problems, both environmental with the leakage as well as these occasional dramatic events will continue to go on. And indeed, if you look at some of the environmental costs, as you alluded to, Lake Maracaibo, where some of the older generation oil has been pumped, has just become an ecological disaster. You have stories all around the major refineries where gas is often flared of sickness and the death of plants and a number of other things. But you're absolutely right that it eats in some ways to also the capability to produce oil. It's ironic, the failures of some of the major refining complexes going back to 2019 actually got so severe at that moment where Venezuela could not actually refine diesel and other gasoline product, which caused a severe shortage in the ability to get gasoline to the trucks that moved food and moved things around the country and were threatening to actually cause an economic paralysis. And so in punctuated ways, and we can remember even in that situation, it was actually the Iranians that came in to help Venezuela fix in a small degree its refinery. So I think we'll continue to see these crises, some larger than others, continuing to occur in the Venezuelan oil industry. It won't completely undercut, but it will periodically create problems in Venezuela getting its oil out, whether it's to the Russians or to the Indians or to the Chinese, to the extent that a U.S. administration and the Europeans do not reimpose sanctions that were lifted in the run-up to the Venezuelan elections.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. We turn to the catastrophe of the Venezuelan elections when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.